Now, once again, here's Mark.
Well, good morning, everybody. 4 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. For the next 2 hours, we're going to talk about cars, and we're going to talk about your cars. And we're going to settle arguments between mothers and fathers and sisters and brothers and all that kind of stuff with respect to car repair. Got Dave Martin sitting here next to me. Dave's been in business how long? Wait, hold on. I'm sorry. I didn't turn you up.
All right. Hey, yeah, we've been in business since 1971. I'm a second-generation owner. My dad started the business in the old Chevron service station business, so you kind of know that drill, right,
yep.
Mark?
Oh, yeah. Your dad and I used to hang around together.
Yeah.
All the old gas station guys in Scottsdale would have breakfast. Your dad was there.
Yeah, absolutely. And so we started doing that, and now we just do complete auto repair, all makes and all models.
Okay, tell them where you're at.
We're at 3636 North 16th Street. That's right in between Osborne and Indian School Road. On the west side of the street, on 16th Street.
Okay. Say that again. I'm writing it down so I can regurgitate it.
Okay.
16th and Osborne South.
Well, it's 16th Street in Clarendon,
okay.
Which is in between Osborne and Indian School Road.
Okay. South. I'm going to just quit south of Indian School. But see, Martin's Auto. It's been that way.
Martin's Auto Repair, yeah.
It's been that way for all of you. Now, I'll tell you what I remember about your dad. There was some really bolsterous guys there who had dealers and Chevron and Mobil and Shell and all of them. And there was always their animosity between the dealer and the gasoline company, always. And it was, in my opinion, it was caused by this. The gasoline provider would hire some kid right out of college to be the boss of five gas stations. And of course, you're dealing with burly-chested guys with gray hair, and you know, and this kid comes in and says, you know, I think you need to do this or do that, and they roll their eyes and they don't pay attention to them, blah blah blah. But when you start talking about some of the guys in this group, you remember Whitey and Jim Harry and all those guys, and they weren't bad guys. But they were pretty strict about the relationship and holding everybody together. Bill from up at Scottsdale Lincoln is another one. They're all still alive. They're all still kicking. But they were the ones that kind of set. And then, of course, now nobody owns a gas station. And the company shops are. And that was something that came later, is they wanted the divorcement bill, which means Chevron and all those guys. Let's be fair. Chevron, Shell, Mobil, all of the gas station majors wanted to sell directly to the public, and they wanted to duke out the distributor and duke out the shop or the gas station. So they were, and they've pretty much done that by now.
Well, I'll tell you, you know, one thing I've learned over the years is being back then. I started when I was 10 years old, and we were pumping gas, cleaning the parking lot, cleaning the bathrooms, doing that kind of stuff. And one of the things that, you know, those gas station guys, those service station guys who come over to the shop and talk to my dad or whatever, they were all pretty much cut from the same cloth. They're really great guys, but if you messed with them, it was going to be ugly.
Well, and like I said, their counterpart or the person in front of them was, you know, some 21-year-old kid that just graduated college, and he has a psychology degree, and now he all of a sudden he's expected to know what the weighted average margin of three different products is. And then he's got 9,000, 10,000 gallon tanks, and he orders 12,000 gallons of unleaded. And so you don't know where to put the rest of it. So all those kinds of things.
I just remember the reps coming by all the time, and they were really big back then on painting your curbs.
Oh, yeah.
That was the thing. And, boy, I'll tell you what, they would be really hard on that.
Are you talking about the curbs on 16th Street, or are you talking about the curbs around the islands?
The curbs around the islands. Yes. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
And they always wanted the metal band to be black.
Yes.
Because that's where the tires would rub when the folks pulled in.
Yep.
And they wanted everything underneath that white. I don't know if it was white for you guys.
You know what? I think it was. I think you're right. Yeah. But you're right. I remember that it had to be black around that part where the tire would hit, because otherwise it'd never keep it clean.
Well, it was a half pipe, so we built a division. So it's a half round thing that's on the top, and then the bottom is straight up and down.
I still got an island out there. We didn't, because we got a big canopy out in front of our shop, and so the island is still there. And exactly what you just said is exactly the way ours is set up.
Yeah. So anyway, well, another guy that's been around a long time is Chuck Nida. He's up at Automotive Dynamics at Sun City's big repair shop. Since 1982, they've been there, but I've known Chuck since 1968. So Automotive Dynamics is a great place. It's run by Derek, his son. So if you're looking for a great shop in Sun City, Automotive Dynamics, they're on the north side of Grand, just west of 99th Avenue. Okay, confession times for me.
Oh, yeah? Uh-oh, what did you do this week?
Well, it's not what I did, but it's what we did. Okay, it's a we.
Okay.
Okay. everybody thinks, well, not, let me change that. There are some people in our industry and outside our industry that thinks I'm perfect, that thinks we're perfect, and that we never make a mistake. So here's what happened. One of our former employees, who we just love him. He was a shuttle bus driver. He's a retired policeman. We just love him. We would, and so Charlie brings his truck in all the time. It's a Ridgeline, and he brings it in all the time for oil changes and stuff. So the other day he brings it in, just like you, belts, hoses, fluids, tires, all that jazz is checked. So we check everything. Busy, busy. Eddie's my number one tech, 32, 33 years with me. Ford guy, doesn't make any mistakes. So Charlie leaves, and so here's my question. How long is the truck going to run with no oil? No, none. Okay? None. Not a quarter or two, but none.
Not long.
I think it went 16 miles.
16?
Yeah.
Holy moly.
Now, it seized up. The cam seized up, and then it blew the timing belt off of it. And then, of course, the calamity was half there because the motor's just wiped out. So it got towed in, and Eddie goes, I honestly don't remember. And the response is there's oil on the dipstick.
Yeah.
So we look at the security cameras, and he looks at them, and he comes back, and he goes, oh, my bad. He says, I never put oil in that. He says, I just spaced it.
Wow.
Now, we've not done that before, but we're putting another engine in that, and it's actually a better engine than we took out of it, in mileage-wise. And so, but, yeah, that happens. How many times have you had a tire fall off?
We've never had one fall off, but we did have a couple of times where the customer noticed the banging noise when when the tire's loose and happened to either come back or call us, and we were able to go out and rectify the situation before anything came off. But and we have a procedure where we torque every wheel before it leaves. But what happens is, and we found this out in my shop too, I told my technicians, one of the things that you got to make sure to do is always finish the process. No matter who comes out and asks you a question, no matter who comes out, you finish the process before you walk away from that car. Mm-hmm. And we had a car one time where my technician, it was the end of the day, he thought he put the wheels on, tighten them all down with the gun. Didn't torque him. He said, I'll torque him in the morning. Well, guess what? In the morning, something else happened, and he forgot all about torquing him. So we ended up having to deal with that. But the wheel didn't come off, and nothing bad happened, just by the grace of God. You know what I mean?
Well, I had a BMW that left here, and it made it about two blocks, and the left rear came off and bounced across the intersection and landed on another car, and then it hit another car. Through the grace of God, nobody's hurt.
Yeah.
The guy that's driving the car is a high school buddy of mine, and he couldn't have been nicer.
Yeah,
but there's no question. And the tech goes, I didn't leave those. Yes, you did. You only made it a block. And there's no strip threads. There's nothing. All we can see is the wheel, the steel part of the wheel, sliding off the threaded studs, and there's metal embedded.
Yeah.
And so, and all of them are the same. So, anyway, you can't say no. All right, we got a caller. Who might that be? Bob, good morning.
Morning, guys.
Morning.
You know what I miss about the old gas stations? Just being able to put air in your tires. Because now I got, you know, the big discount store where we get our tires, we still do. But they used to have a self-serve hose behind, you know, off to the side.
Yep.
But they took that out because somebody hurt themselves and they sued or whatever. So now I got to pull up when the guys are working, changing tires. I got to find somebody, have them put air in my tires, you know. I just want to put air in my tires, but you can't even do that anymore.
All right, I'm going to stick up for them, though. And I understand that you didn't throw them under the bus either. Discount, I've actually worked for the legal team of Discount Tire a lot. And their tire guys are more expert than 90% of the people I know. And I'll tell you what, they're more expert than anybody that works for me. They have been trained to look at the door sticker. They've been trained to put the right air in the tires. They've been trained to look for loose lug nuts. They've been trained to look for eggs and abnormal wear. And it makes no difference if that kid's a junior or senior in high school. He's been trained. The reason I know that is because Alan, who's 40 years old, my son, worked at the Discount Tire over on Elliott Road in Hardy.
Oh, wow.
And the training was immense. So people, and they do it for free, and they don't look on the tires if they sold them to you. It's just a wonderful, wonderful company. But, Bob, you're absolutely right. One of the bad things about the old gas station air places is somebody would pull up there, and then it would take them about 4 weeks to do all four tires. Then they'd open the hood, and then they'd wax their car.
Yeah.
And it became like their own bay. And every once in a while, they would try to hook up their air gun. Of course, we've just got an air chuck on the end of it. But that wasn't very often. You know, that was once a month somebody took advantage of it. And if they changed their oil, then that's where we kind of drew the line. You got to go somewhere else.
Well, and I will say this, too. When we had the service station part of it, we had the air nozzles out front, and people would come up and put their own air in their tire. And one time I happened to be out there, and I went by, and I saw this lady putting air in her tires, and I went and did some things. I came back, and she's still putting air in the same tire.
Yeah.
I'm thinking, uh-oh. So I went over there, and I says, whoa, what are you doing? She goes, well, the tire still looks flat. It's a radial tire. Well, they all look flat, you know? And so I went and checked it with the gauge, and she had 90 pounds of air in this mm-hmm. passenger car tire. I'm like, holy moly, so I had to let all that out. But, yeah, so you really got to be careful.
Well, in the old gas station days, that happened at least once a year. Somebody would, you know, go by your air station, and then all of a sudden there would be a blast, a sonic boom. And the person that was airing the tires was just in disbelief. They have no idea what just happened. They blew the tire clean off the bead. The explosion was unbelievably loud. Mm-hmm. Through the grace of God, I don't remember any of them getting hurt, other than the fact that there was probably some of them that wet their pants somewhere during that process.
Bicycle tires were bad about that, too.
Oh, yeah,
bicycle
you're right.
Tires were, I mean, it seemed like 9 out of 10 would blow up their tire.
And it was just a matter of hold it until you think. So, anyway, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. If you have a comment, you're more than welcome to make it. And if you have a question like, which air pressure should I put in the tire, the one on the sticker or the one on the side of the tire, we can address that. Why do I have to use the oil that's written on the oil cap of my car? You have to. There's no question about that. Those are the kinds of things that you can ask us and we can discuss for you as well. It's also important to talk about some of the things that I hear a lot is shop supplies, environmental, and the sales tax. And so one lady said those two add up to 20% of the bill, those three, shop supplies, environmental charges. And, well, you start with 10% sales tax.
Right.
And we did the math, and it does. Mm-hmm. But there's costs associated with two of those, and then, of course, we have to collect the sales tax. So those are the kinds of things that we talk about. 602-508-0960. Well, welcome back, everybody. 21 minutes after the hour, 10 o'clock, 602-508-0960. We've got at least three lines open, 602-508-0960. Kurt's Auto Repair is up at I-17 and Bell Road, the northeast corner, been around since 1987, both gas and diesel, ASC-certified technicians. But the best I like Kurt's is I've sent him a couple of people. And like all the rest of my shops, Kurt's able to diagnose the car correctly, bid the car correctly, and ultimately be kind of different than the estimate the customer came in with. And oftentimes it's really the diagnosis. So, for instance, they say it needs a battery and he finds it's got a bad alternator belt. Or they say it needs a starter and the battery's actually defective. So those are the kinds of things that all the shops are capable of doing because everybody's been around the block and this ain't my shop's first rodeo. They've been there. Okay, who might that be?
We have Robert.
Robert, good morning. How can I help you?
Good morning. I got a I got a memory problem. 2007 Ford Freestyle, and it's got 150,000 miles on it. I'm changing the oil, and I have a bunch of 5W30 instead of 5W20. Is there any problem with putting that little extra in there?
Are you going to put 5 quarts of the 530?
I think that holds 6 quarts.
Okay, all right.
And it's full synthetic.
Okay. All right. What do you think, Dave?
Well, I think when we look it up in our manual, it'll say 520 or 530. I think you can use either. We definitely stick with the recommended on all the cars that mm-hmm. we bring in. If it's a 0040 or 020, I mean, that's what we put in it, or 530 or 520. We stick with it. But I think, and that, if you looked in your manual, I think it would say 520 or 530.
And I'm going to just tell you flat out, I've been designated by a lot of entities as an oil expert. Let me just explain. It flows like a 5-weight when it's cold, and it flows like a 20-weight or a 30-weight when it's hot. So for me, I just put it in and forget about it, because I can't imagine you're going to have a problem. it may, because it's a little bit more peanut buttery, the 30 weight versus the 20 weight, it may rob you of 1/4 of a mile per gallon until you change. And you know, it's really that way. It doesn't change viscosity, so to speak. It flows like this at 60 below zero, and it flows like this when it's 100 degrees outside. So going from, and 20 would be acceptable because it's going to cover outside ambient probably to 150 degrees, but 30 weight's going to be 140 degrees, and it's been a long time since you've driven in that kind of weather.
Right.
So that's okay. Really it, okay?
Okay, thank you so much.
You betcha. You were saying something, Dave?
I remember back in the day, thicker was better, and now thinner is better.
Well, you know, let me tell you what I did in court the other day. Okay, put your hands out and pretend there's peanut butter there, mm-hmm. and then rub your hands together as fast as you can, okay? There's a little bit of friction. We're not getting a lot of lube. Now, cover your hands with butter, and then go, and it's a lot easier for your hands to do that. The issue has to do with, we're putting water in cars today.
Absolutely.
We always put peanut butter,
yep.
you know, 30
yep.
weight, 40 weight, 50. Remember 2050 was a real common truck and van oil. And so if it flows like a zero weight when it's cold, it really takes all the peanut butter out of it. And if it flows like a 20 weight or a 30 weight when it's hot, it's okay. It's okay. We now know thinner is better. It takes less horsepower to turn over the peanut butter first thing in the morning. So bottom line is it's better.
Do you remember the additives that you have to put in, or you had to put it in the microwave in order to heat it up so you could pour it in the car?
Yeah.
Because, I mean, it would just take forever to come out of the bottle.
Maury's, STP.
Yeah.
I mean, there was a lot of them.
There was some thick stuff, man.
Well, and the gray-haired guys were the ones, or their wives, were the ones that say, hey, 4 quarts and a bottle of whatever.
Right.
Okay, we got a caller. Who's that, Gil?
That would be Henry.
Henry, good morning.
Good morning, sir. Always a pleasure to talk to you. Wanted to ask you, what is your opinion on ECU reflashing, remapping, like Bama does one, all that stuff? What do you think about taking out the regulations that the manufacturer puts in and overriding them, like limiters and stuff?
First of all, I would make sure that they're going to give you what they're saying they're going to give you. And moving limiters is typically an RPM ceiling and a speed ceiling. So most cars they shut the fuel off at 93 miles an hour. So if you want to go 120, then they can probably retake that limiter and move it up. Here's the real issue. The guy that does it, and we have a really good ECM flash guy or TCM that comes out, and when we put a new electronic on, just like you, we have to tell the car that we put a new electronic, and the electronic one, the TCM or ECM, has to know what the car is. So we tell them one another. But when you start reflashing and messing with the parameters, that's pretty risky, because if he adds too much timing to give you more power, then you don't hear the ping, then you're going to end up with a hole in one of the pistons. And
got
the
it.
Same way goes with cold mornings. If he sets it up to where we're not going to have a kind of a fast idle in the morning to get the oil to thin up just a little bit, or maybe he makes it too fast, and so we have additional wear. There's just good and bad about that. But also, let me tell you and confess, there are vehicles that are around me. I'm walking the street. That really crooked line here. There's vehicles around me that we have modified the inputs and outputs. So if the throttle is saying it's 50%, then the computer gives so much fuel. But if the throttle is saying 60% when it's really at 50%, there's more fuel. So fuel economy goes down, but perhaps power and performance would go up. You also run a very significant risk of failing emissions. And then you got to back that dog all the way up and then go through emissions again. So,
yeah, some of them have settings so that you could have presets, like one for pre-emissions, one for post, that kind of thing.
You know, I think you're going to get in trouble, because we have the ability to look and see how many softwares are in there, and certainly the dealers and manufacturers do, and I'm not quite sure that our Arizona emissions doesn't have the ability to look at your software calibration and make sure it fits your car. So
good thing I have an address in Prescott, then.
Oh, and you could. But here's the deal. Why don't you just put a nice air filter on it, maybe modify the exhaust a little bit to kind of empty the motor up just a little bit, and maybe thin out the oil a little bit, because obviously the car will run better, run faster, and get better fuel economy. And then I think it's important that you send me a piece of paper saying your wife says this is okay.
Second question really quick. Have you ever had anyone get physical in your shop after not liking a repair or a problem with the build? You ever have anybody, want to go to come to blows?
Mark is the nicest guy in the world. That would never happen to Mark.
No, that's not true. We have exercised our right to remove people from our lobby, and most of them come to the counter without their car's not here, and they want to talk about their car, and we say we can't diagnose it over the counter. You have to bring it in. And then they blow up about, oh, you're just trying to rip me off for a diagnostic fee or something, or they'll just get mad because we can't or won't answer them. So there's a lot of times that the emotion isn't really with us. It's just that they want something that they're not likely to get. But to answer your specific question, the answer is hell yes. We've had people come in, and the wife comes in, and she's mad, or the husband comes in because she and it's always some kind of an authorization or something number. And we'll make that exception one time. But that's all. We're going to make it in your file, and we're going to say, one time, you get to exercise. This is only $8.50. Maybe you ought to wait till it's 30, and that might be better. 602-508-0960. Okey-dokey. 34 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. Let me tell you about Strictly Diesel Service and Repair. He's up on Pinnacle Peak Road and I-17. Nate is a really good diesel diagnostic technician and a repair technician. He knows Fords, Chevys, Dodges like nobody I know, including Mark Salem. So if you're looking for a good diesel guy and you've got a Ford, Chevy, or Dodge that nobody else can fix, I promise you, Nate can. That's Strictly Diesel Service and Repair. Kyle, what's up?
Yeah, good morning. My son's 2013 Mazda 6. It's driving us nuts. It constantly or intermittently, the alarm goes off, like it's just sitting there. And it might go 2 months without, then all of a sudden it's doing it every day, and then it might go months again. And, done a lot of internet research, and it just seems like all kinds of shotgun approaches, and either it doesn't fix it or, I'm at a loss on it.
Okay,
I don't have any idea.
Is it an original alarm? It's not an aftermarket alarm or anything?
No, it's not an aftermarket. It's just the horn, and I'm at the point where I just want to disable it somehow, but, yeah.
I got a couple of suggestions for you. Isn't there some buttons on each one of the doors that opens and closes or turns on the dome light?
Yes.
Okay. What we do is the opposite side of the car where the button pushes, we put about 10 layers of masking tape there. So basically, we're pushing the button further in. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
I'd do one door at a time. The other thing I would do is the horn pad. How many miles are on this Mazda?
We're probably around 65,000.
Okay, that's not enough. But you know how the Fords, sometimes the horn pad will distort, and it blows in the middle of the night?
Yeah.
And so, you can probably use the masking tape thing, but I do one door at a time, and I think you'll ultimately hit which one it is, because when the dome light comes on, the alarm goes off. So it's almost there's an entry problem, and I don't think that you've got a security module that's bad, or you need a new computer, or, the ignition switch is bad. None of that makes sense. We've got something telling the PCM that the door is open or someone's gained entry to your car. And the easiest way for that to happen is that the door switch turns on the dome light and the computer sees that. So I would do that first. And if I'm successful, you owe me $6.50.
Well, I'd give you more than that if I'm successful.
I'll tell you what. When the plate passes you, just add an extra $5 and I'll be happy. I need all the help I can get when I go north, okay?
All right. I love it. Thank you.
Yeah, because disconnecting those things sometimes isn't that easy.
Oh, and you're right.
Yeah.
And the only thing you can really do is disconnect the horn.
Yeah.
And so that's going to make the lights flash and the dome lights flash. And so now it's tough.
Yeah.
And I don't know. It's just somebody's going to have to do it one at a time. You were going to talk about real quick about changing the programming with a chip or a programmer on to a card and make it more of a hot rod.
Yeah, one of the things that we've ran into with a couple of our clients, and we don't do the chips at my shop. We don't do it, but they went out and did it. You know, they went and ordered it on Amazon or whatever and got it, and then they went ahead and put it in their car, and then they ended up having a motor problem, and they had an 80,000-mile drivetrain warranty on the vehicle, and they went and took it into the dealership, and they said, your warranty is voided.
And we just had that done with a hot rod Ford truck. And I went over there on behalf of the insurance company, and they're right. The programming calibration is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Okay? He had in there 15, 16, 17, 18.
Right.
And they go, this isn't a programming calibration we recognize. So all we know is you have changed the performance of this engine the way we designed it. You either made it a hot rod or whatever, but your warranty's over because you have changed something. So anyway, it's just kind of the way it does. Tom, good morning. How can we help you?
Morning. I've got a 99 Ranger 3-liter, about 110,000 miles on it. And I'm an old geezer, and I have a routine with taking vehicles in for emissions testing.
Okay.
So I disconnected the battery. I blew out the MAP sensor. I blew out the air filter, cleaned up the PCV. And I did all the things I've been doing for decades before I take a vehicle to emissions.
Mm-hmm.
So the emissions station is only 10 miles away, and the thing comes up not ready. And that's a new term for me. I never knew not ready before.
Okay.
But I wanted your experience with what is a drive cycle for a vehicle like that to get it ready.
Okay. Work with me because you're going to think of things that I don't.
Yeah.
Okay, we put two guys in the car. They're going to be gone for 40 minutes, 50 minutes, an hour. Now, one guy's reading, and he says, it's got to idle for 32, and I'm being facetious now, 32 and a half seconds. And I forgot, it's got to be in park or drive or whatever. So one guy's talking and one guy's doing, okay, we have to maintain 45 miles an hour for 3 minutes. The question is, depending on traffic, you may or may not be able to do that. And it's got this thing that honk the horn 3 times, spit out the driver's window, wave your right arm until it hits the ceiling, roll the back windows up and down 3 times. It's as stupid as that.
Right.
And so when you disconnect the battery, you wipe out the memory on the monitors. So you just simply have to drive it. And, Dave, give me an idea what you think as far as how long and how many miles. It has to go through at least 4 heat cycles.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. Sometimes it takes like four days to and there again, like you said, traffic is the bear. We've even taken cars out. My techs have actually taken the car over a weekend.
Mm-hmm.
And Sunday morning, when everybody's still sleeping at 5 o'clock or 6 o'clock in the morning, my guy's out there with his kid, and his kid's telling him what to do. And he's, this is, and like you said, it is so crazy. We've had cars where it took us 2 weeks to get it through.
And I agree with you. It's 10 days to 2 weeks for most of them.
Yeah.
We might speed it up a little bit, but if you just, the answer to your question, Tom, is just drive it and don't disconnect the battery. You can do everything else you did, but don't disconnect the battery. And especially if you don't have any check engine lights on. People, in the old days, they had a check engine light off. They'd take the battery off, they'd plug it back in, and the computer would have to see the problem numerous times before it turned on the check engine light. Well, they would sneak through emissions at that time. The light wasn't on, boom, we're done. New cars have monitors in them, and they monitor the speed, the heat, how fast you accelerate, how slow you accelerate, the exhaust emissions. So it's going to take you 10 days to 2 weeks to fix that. Okay?
Yeah.
Okay. Thanks, Tom. That was a good question. I've never had that before. And Henry, you stay right there because we're going to be back right after this.
Well,
Welcome back, everybody. 44 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. We've got open lines available. We're going to get to Henry in just a minute. 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. You have a one in, well, you actually have, there's four open lines. So you got a really good chance. Henry, good morning. How can we help you?
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call. I have a problem with the Buick Enclave, and I'm taking it to our shop. They rebuilt the engine for us, and we noticed it was having some hesitation when you turn the key on, and it'll turn over and then it hesitate, and then it would start. And this is after the engine was rebuilt. We had a problem with it before, and they said they would rebuild it, so we said okay, and we took the lesser cost. And so it was still doing the same thing, so we took it in. And now we're still having all kinds of problems with it. For one thing, it continues to do the hesitation when you turn the key. And it's not the battery. We put a brand new battery
okay,
in the car.
Okay, but wait a minute. Part of the problem is you got both of us looking at ourselves. We need a better description of this hesitation.
Okay. Well, you know how when you get into the car, you turn the ignition, it just goes vroom, it starts right up.
Right.
Well, when we use the key to turn the ignition to start it over, it doesn't start up like it was starting up before. That's after the rebuilding of the engine and all of that. So
okay,
it still would start.
Okay, I know, but this communication gap has to be dealt with. So when you hit the key, you turn it to the start position. Is there silence for some period of time before it cranks, or does it crank? Are we an extended crank where we're cranking and then it catches? You see, the semantics mean everything. So
right.
Which is it?
Okay, extended crank.
Okay. Oh, okay. All right. Now we're is it cold and hot?
Well, when we try to crank it cold, I'm not sure. I have not really paid attention to it when it's hot.
Okay.
I just noticed that, when the car, everything was going fine with it. We turned the key to the start position, and the engine would kick right over.
Okay, I get it. You to help the shop, let me explain. And, Dave, you go with me on this. If it's a cold crank and no start, that's quite different than a hot crank and no start, because oftentimes it's two different symptoms.
Right.
Now, Dave, is this likely to be related to an engine overhaul?
No.
No, not at all.
No.
For instance, if there's a whole cold crank and it's extended, only cold, that means fuel pressure. That typically means fuel pressure, right?
Right.
And so if it's a hot crank, it could still be fuel pressure, or it could be something where we've saturated the canister with gas and now we're running rich, and it's going to take a little while. So there's two different avenues. I guess what I'm wondering is, if we're smart enough to build the engine, why can't we fix this? And this has nothing to do with the engine. To do with the engine. This has to do with spark or fuel.
Right. And one of the things we always tell our clients too, in a situation like this, what you might want to try first is try cycling the key.
Right. Three times.
You just turn the key in the on position. Don't try to start it. Turn it back off. Do it again. And do it a third time, and then try to start the car. If it fires right up like that, it means that you probably
lost fuel pressure.
You lost fuel pressure
overnight.
Yeah,
but that's what you're up against. I'm really, really surprised that they've done engine work to try to fix that.
Let me ask you this. They've done good work for us before, but I'm just thinking about moving on to another shop. And the thing is that we took it in, and they had it for about 4 weeks, and I know that the complication of the newer engines with the computers and all of that can, take some time to do, but 4 weeks, it didn't take them that long to rebuild the engine, so.
If you walk into my shop and you start holding me to a 4 week thing, I'm going to hit you between the eyes with a $950 estimate. I don't want to be involved. I don't want to dance to the music from him or you. I want a specific set of questions answered. I know where I'm going to go. Your question about is this related to the engine or not, the answer will be when you fix it. But Dave and I are both, we're pretty adamant this is a fuel delivery problem. So it's, we don't want to go by his diagnosis because his diagnosis, he didn't fix it. And you have to be careful when you walk into a shop, because if this is going to be a hornet's nest, and after we fix it, then the first shop calls us and calls us names and everything else and said we fixed it, or we added to it, or we raised the fuel pressure or something like that. No, none of us want to be involved in this. So 4 weeks is, Dave, on a 1 to 10 scale, this is a, with 1 being easy and 10 being a difficult, an extended crank.
Oh, it's probably 4.
And I would get, was my number.
Yeah.
That was my number.
Yeah.
It would be possible, if you were my customer, I might let you borrow a fuel pressure gauge, and I would plug it in, and I put it on the dashboard, or on the outside of the windshield.
Yeah.
Tape it to there. And I would instruct you what to do to verify the fuel pressure is okay, when we get it and how much do we get, and does it start at that particular time. So the fact that it starts and runs means the camshaft sensor's fine, the crankshaft sensor's fine, the ignition coils are fine, the pickup assembly is fine because it starts and runs. All we have is the absence of spark or fuel. So Henry, I can't fix your car over the radio, but I can tell you that I would bet 2-to-1 odds with a maximum bet of $50 that your extended crank has to do with fuel or spark.
Yeah.
And it has nothing to do with the motor, but that's neither here nor there. Who's next, Gil?
That would be Wayne.
Wayne, good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for taking the call. Glad to talk to you.
Okay.
So I've got an 06 Kia with a V6 engine, and I found that after sitting for several hours or overnight, it doesn't want to start. It's that extended crank, I think, that you were just talking to Henry about. So What I found is if I spray starting fluid into the intake, it'll fire right up, and then it'll run fine. Or If I cycle the key to the on and off and on and off a few times, then it will crank up and run fine.
Okay.
Without that extended starting period.
We can give you the menu right now.
Yeah.
Dave, work with me on this. It's a bad check valve in the fuel pump.
Absolutely.
Bad fuel pressure regulator. An injector that's leaking down.
Yeah.
Because he hasn't said anything about black smoke when he first starts it up, but we would have him look for that black smoke.
Right.
Yeah. No black smoke.
Okay. So we've lost fuel pressure, and you're cycling the key, which is telling the pump, give me some pressure, off, give me some pressure, off, give me some pressure, off. You do that 3 times. Now the pump has pumped the system full of fuel, and you're done. So This isn't that hard to diagnose. If you want to guess, then get on the Internet and put a fuel pressure regulator, replace all the injectors, and the pump in the tank. That's any other thing you can think of?
No, that's pretty much it.
Okay. So this, do you have a shop that you know? That you like?
Yes, I do.
Okay.
Yeah.
I think the best part of what you said is it's extended, 3 points. It's extended crank. Number two, it fires right up when I artificially inseminated, if you'll let me use those words.
Yeah.
That's right.
And number three, when I cycle the key 2 or 3 times, it starts right up. That kind of stuff at the front counter would make me jump over the counter and hug you, because we don't get that. We don't get that. So you just saved yourself $50 to $100 worth of diagnostic time, because you've just told us so much we were going to check for anyway.
So, all right.
All righty. Good luck to you, Wayne.
Well, I don't have access to put a fuel pressure gauge on the engine there. There's no provision for it. Any suggestions on that? If I take the next step, should I try to splice in a fuel pressure gauge back at the top of the gas tank?
No. You're going to take 10 steps backwards. So we oftentimes have banjo fittings where we take a fitting apart and stick a banjo fitting in there. You might be mistaken about where the Schrader valve is at that we check fuel pressure from, but that's the shop's issue. They are the ones that are going to have to deal with that. So if you want to fix it yourself, there's going to be more to it than that, but you're going to need some specialized equipment to pull that off. Anyway, Wayne, thank you very much. That was a good call. We got somebody else, Gil?
Yes, we do. We have Doug.
Doug, we won't be able to get everything with you, but we're going to start because we're about 4 minutes from the end. But go ahead.
Okay. Good morning, Mark and Dave. I've got a an appearance question. I'm thinking about having my wheels on a new vehicle I just purchased powder coated. And I guess my question is, what is your opinion of powder coating wheels? And my other option would obviously be to buy a new set of tires and wheels, black already. And if I do that, I would consider upgrading from 20-inch wheels to a 21 or a 22. And I'm unsure about how you sync a bigger diameter wheel with your speedometer.
Well, you brought up a whole bunch of good points there. First of all, I'm going to tell you, I can't answer your question, but I know who can. The question is, should I have my wheels powder coated, or should I just get another set of wheels?
Correct.
Okay. The second question of is if I move from a 22 to, I don't know, they make a 23 or 24 or to a 20 or whatever, can you recalibrate my speedometer? Chances are no. But what we can give you is Mark Salem can. We can give you a piece of paper that it says, when you're doing 60, you're really doing 62.
Okay.
And when you're doing 70, you're really doing 74. So
okay.
We have a computer, and so does Discount Tire, where you can punch in the old, punch in the new, and then you can give somebody a speedometer readout.
Okay.
And so that kind of stuff. All right, you got a pencil handy?
Yes.
480-598-1234 and ask for Alan. And
oh,
please
okay.
Don't call Monday morning early for obvious reasons, because we're
right.
Swamped. But Alan has a division that... he sells lots and lots of tires, and so I don't know if he's going to buy this idea of powder coating, but I'm not quite sure he isn't, because I've seen him powder coat wheels before. They also, if you have a black wheel and you want a red stripe on the outside bead, that can be done as well. So,
okay.
But anyway, talk to him and be prepared to send him a picture of one wheel, okay?
Okay.
All right, and Alan will help you for free, so long as you don't take 2 hours of his time.
Okay.
Okay?
All right, thank you.
You betcha. Does that happen to you very often?
The powder coating thing?
No, it's some. Oh, it just sometimes.
It does happen. It really does. But you know, I've seen some good powder coating, and I've seen some really bad powder coating. So the question is we don't do that. Obviously, either Alan has another division where he probably has a lot of knowledge in that. So definitely, that's what I would do. I would lean on somebody that had more knowledge.
He buys more tires and wheels, lift kits and lights, than the mechanical shop buys in parts.
I believe it.
Oh, and I'll even switch that. The bill for his, what I said, tires and wheels and fancy lights and suspension kits exceeds the gross sales of the mechanical side.
Oh yeah, that stuff's expensive.
And so yeah, it's but there's like you said, you have to be really careful. We've made mistakes. We've made mistakes with powder coating. We've picked the wrong dance partners for trimming, truing wheels and that kind of stuff.
The difference is that's fun money.
And it is. It is.
People love spending that fun money because they get in their car and they get to see those cool wheels and stuff. Yeah. You and I do mechanical work on the car and they're looking at it like, yeah, well, but it's kind of anticlimactic or whatever.
What'd you do for $2,100? I can't see anything.
I know. That's exactly right.
602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. The lines are wide open. There's five of them. 602-508-0960. Dave Martin from Martin's Auto, Mark Salem from KKNT, and we'll be right back right after this. Good morning, everybody. Good afternoon. We've got two Bobbies on the phone. We're going to call them Bobby number one and Bobby number two. But first, let me tell you about Thompson's Auto Repair and Towing. In Mesa, there's only one shop I've investigated, and there's only one shop I can recommend to friends, family, and customers, and that's Thompson's Auto Repair and Towing. Since 1970, they've been around, and Brian and Thelma come from two families that have been in Mesa in the gas station and auto repair business since in the 60s. So they know what it's like to smell gasoline at the dinner table.
There's no question about that. They've been around that way. So they have ASE certified technicians. They really do a good job. And they're on Main Street just east of Stapley on the south side of the road. They're worth the drive, and it's a short drive for most of you in Mesa. But Thompson's Auto Repair and Towing is the only place that I can actually recommend. You had a quick comment about the diagnostic fee over the phone.
Well, the diagnostic fee over the phone is you're not looking at the vehicle. You're listening to what the customer is
describing
to you. And sometimes what happens is the customer thinks that the least they tell you, the least it's going to cost, which is totally the opposite. The more they tell us, the least it's going to cost. We get a car in there sometimes where the customer will bring it in and I'll say, has anybody been looking at the car? No, nobody's been looking at the car. We lift the hood and my tech comes in and goes, clearly somebody has had their hands underneath the hood of this car. And they've been doing this and this. Are they trying to fix this problem? So then you call the customer back and you have to ask them again. And usually the wife will answer the phone and say, yeah, my husband's been messing with this car for 2 weeks. And
he's been on the internet.
Yeah, he's messing with it for 2 weeks because your husband said nobody's been looking at the car.
Well, not only that is they spent more guessing than probably we would have charged them diagnostic. And some people say, I just want you to tell me what it is and we'll go fix it. There's a bad thing about that. If it doesn't work, then the question is did you do the job right or did I misdiagnose it? Well, the only way I can prove who's right and who's wrong is to go in and diagnose it again.
Right.
And so that's a problem, and that's kind of tough for us. Bobby, number one, how can we help you?
Hey, yeah, I wanted to preface my question by saying that you're always talking about referring to the owner's manual. And when it comes to torquing wheels, all manuals tell you what the torque specs are for the lug nuts.
Uh-huh.
And every time I go to a place to have my wheels balanced or rotated, and these are places that all they do is type. These are leading places. They always way over torque the wheels. And I'm wondering, at what point does it start to do any damage or distort anything? Because the other day I had it done by a leading place, Okay. Actually one you recommend.
Okay. All right. Well, let me ask you some questions. Do you see them do it with the gun? And if you do, does the gun have a long socket that's a colored socket, yellow, blue, red? Have you seen that?
Yeah, those torque sticks.
Yeah, those work really well.
I was actually watching them through the glass, and I specifically told him what the torque spec was, and he agreed with me. He checked his chat. Yeah, you're right. That's what it is. Any pounds on this particular car.
Okay.
And see him.
Okay, I understand.
Torque the wheels down with the gun.
Okay. And the torque stick is a device that we can buy that helps us just grab our air guns and do the appropriate torque. So, David, the question to you is what's the downside? Is there a downside if he believes they're over-torquing it? So what's the downside? What's going to happen next?
Well, my question was, is how do you know they're over-torquing it? And I don't see over torquing them.
Because when I get home, I check them because I have a torque wrench, a very good one, and it's new, and I'm very expert at using the torque wrench.
So do you back the wheel?
It's our time for questions. Hold on.
Yeah, so do you back the lug nut off and then retorque it, or is that what you're doing, or
when I tried to loosen one of them with an 18-inch breaker bar.
Okay. Let me ask you about your torque wrench. Does your torque wrench click, or does it have a little arrow that goes on a gauge?
No, it clicks.
Okay. I can't tell you. All I can tell you is if you're right that they're over-torquing it, they're going to stretch the threads, and at 100,000 miles, you're going to start replacing lug nuts. If they over torque the heck out of them, then you're gonna go around a corner, hit a curb, and it's gonna pop one or more of the studs off because it's been stretched. So,
yeah.
I don't know. Take your own torque wrench when you go in and have them torque them with your torque wrench, but it takes more to take them off than it does to put them on.
Yeah.
Okay? Okay, I know what you're saying. I've got other callers, but I'm doing the best. You've explained to me you're using a clicker torque wrench. You're explaining to me that they're using torque sticks, but you're still unhappy with the way they're doing it. So if you want, you only have two choices. Take your wrench with you and have them use your wrench to touch your lug nuts, or when they get home, loosen them up one by one and torque them yourself. That's the only choices you got. I got to go to Bobby number two. Bobby, how are you?
Hi, good morning.
Hi.
Hi, I have a 2014 Chevy Silverado with the a V6 in it.
Okay.
And, you know, I track my gas mileage. I drive 40 miles to work one way, so 80 miles round trip. So I've got about 168,000 miles on it. But lately I've noticed that the gas mileage is really starting to go down. It's got that average on there. Usually I average, you know, 19 to 20 miles to the gallon, you know, because I don't really step on it real hard. And I'm down to 17.
Okay.
And wondering is, you know, what do you guys think?
I think that my truck varies more than that.
It does?
Yeah. My wife will drive Tempe to Payson and back, and she'll probably stick it at about 17 and a half. And it's a one-ton dually with a diesel motor. So she's at 17. I go up and down the mountain empty just like her, and mine's going to be 15. And we both kind of reset to see if we can, you know, beat one another. Let me ask you a question. Did this coincide with the summertime? Because the air conditioning compressor can affect your cool or your mile per gallon. So if this is something that changed in April or May and it's carried through the summer, then my question would be, is I wonder what's going to happen the first couple weeks of winter.
Right. It just kind of happened recently in the last couple of weeks.
Okay.
But I mean, it's been hotter, though. But I mean, the last couple of weeks, I've noticed that it's gone way down and no difference in driving. And then maybe if there's something that I could do, like attitude or something, I could.
No. No, I'm not. Okay. Dave and I are both shaking our heads. No. I mean, here's what you can do is just zero it out. Just reset it to zero and drive it three times to work. And then note your number, and then do it three times to work. Now, you don't have a 16-year-old kid that's been taking this on dates, do you?
No, not at all.
Okay.
All right. I'm the only one that drives it.
You're the only one that drives it. Okay. All right. What are you laughing at?
it's a very
good question.
Why are you picking on 16-year-olds, Mark?
No, I'm not. Let me ask you a question then. When you were 16-year-old and your dad wasn't in the truck, did you drive it the same as if he was?
No.
And you're, no, raise your right hand. I'm going to swear you in first.
No, not at all. But my dad would laugh because, I mean, he would see us driving like that and, you know, smoking the tires and all that other stuff. And he would just laugh. And then one day I asked him, I said, what do you think that's funny? He goes, because when you have to replace those tires, it's going to cost you a lot of money.
Well, and my dad would go right on. And my mother would go, give me your keys. So my dad thought it was cool, but my mother didn't. So anyway, 602-508-0960. Bobby, thank you very much. I just think we need to reset and make sure that we still have that. And here's the deal, too. If you have a problem, there won't be long before a check engine light comes on. If you're running rich, if you have an air delivery problem, if you're overfueling the engine, if the oxygen sensor's gone out of whack, after all, you got 168,000 miles. An oxygen sensor could cause a drop in fuel economy, and it'll take a while before it turns on the check engine light. 10-4?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
And then sometimes our driving habits change. Sometimes we take different routes. Sometimes there's a lot of different variables that you can put into the equation.
Yeah, not only that, he could have a girlfriend that weighs north of 200. Hey, come on.
His name is Mark Salem.
You know what?
Send all the hate mail to him.
I don't care. It's a fun, you're laughing. It's always a lot of other people. You know, it's the old, never mind. We're moving on. Who's next, Gil?
Lee is next.
Lee, good morning. How can we help you?
Morning.
Hi.
I talked to you a while back about air pressure and motorhome tires, but I got a completely different subject this time. Electric fans in these cars?
Yes.
Well, the reason I brought all this up, my side-by-side electric fan keeps going out because it gets water in it. Well, the thing has a vent tube at the top of it, and they run a quarter-inch piece of tubing up, and it goes up into the battery box and blah, blah, blah. Well, the last one we replaced, I got the fan back, and I ripped it open. It's a sealed fan's made by Tri-Pak. Anyways, I opened it up. And it's all full of water, corrosion, blah, blah, blah. So now I'm thinking, I have a 2014 Honda CRV. Has two fans, an electric fan. Either one of them fans has a vent tube attached to it. And it looks like a sealed unit.
Okay, so are you comparing the CRV fans to your side-by-side off-road vehicle?
Excuse me?
Are you again comparing the CRV passenger car cooling fans to your side-by-side off-road?
Well, I'm not comparing them. It's basically, the two animals are basically the same. It's a 12-volt sealed electric motor is what it is. Now, on the cars, you know, they're subject to water and all this. Basically, anything that heats up, cools off, builds condensation. No, and,
okay, but what's the question? I understand.
The question is, does it have to have no vent? That's my question.
Okay, the fan on your side-by-side or the fan on your CRV?
Well, either one. The one on the side-by-side has a vent.
Okay. I don't know why they have a vent, but your CRV doesn't. And have you ever seen a car with any kind of a vent on it?
No.
Of course, in the car's defense, we're not running CRVs and cars with electric fans through a foot of water.
Right.
Okay, normally we aren't. But even if we were, have you ever taken a fan apart or have you ever seen a corroded problem on an automotive fan?
No.
No, nor have I. And so when you look at the big picture, the difference between the CRV, the Honda CRV passenger car vehicle, and your side-by-side is probably the environment it's run in. So if you have a vent off of your cooling system fan, why don't you stick a piece of cotton or a pair of nylons over the end of it to try to keep trash out of it? And I would extend it all the way to the roof. That way, if you got water around your ears, then you know why the fan's corroded. But, I mean, we have lots of off-road vehicles, and we service lots of side-by-sides, four-seaters, quads, and we've never seen the problem that you have. So I'm unclear as to why that happened. But if you're concerned with the vent, forget the installing a vent on your CRV. There is a car or truck out there that has a vent on the electric cooling fan. I would focus on your off-road vehicle and perhaps get the vent high enough to where it's not going to gobble water, and obviously higher than your head is appropriate.
Well, and also make sure that there's no shield missing. You know, sometimes they have shields on those side-by-sides. Mm-hmm. I had an off-road vehicle for a while, and sometimes if the shield gets either bent or gets removed or broken, water can get into a place where it's really not designed to get into.
But still, you got that fan that's a foot to 18 inches off the ground.
Yeah.
And so you're in pretty deep water when you're going to have water intrusion into that. But anyway, Lee, I hope we've helped you, but good luck to you. And 602-508-0960, the lines are wide open, 602-508-0960. We'll be right back.
The mechanic raised up from under
Let's talk about really good shops in just a sec, or right now, because there are really good shops out there, and that's Automatic Transmission Exchange. Phil's been around doing transmission service since 1968. He knows power glides. He knows those Chrysler shift glides or whatever the heck they were called. He knows transmissions better than anybody I know, but you can look at his gray hair and know he does that. Anyway, he's at 40th Street in Washington, Automatic Transmission Exchange. He knows how to fix the small stuff all the way to rebuild the big stuff. He says actually he does a lot more small and medium tickets than he does the big old dogs, the way you're doing the whole transmission. So, Automatic Transmission Exchange, 40th Street in Washington. Steve, you've been waiting. Thank you for that.
Yeah, good afternoon. I was just curious. Two callers ago was a Rob talking about the gas mileage. I wonder the last time he checked the pressure in his tires. It might kind of vary in the summertime.
And you're right. There is so many of those things.
Yeah.
We've had customers that, I don't know, they've had an extra load in the truck. You look in the back and there's a couple pieces of plywood or whatever. Yes, the tire pressure, the wrong oil will affect your fuel economy. Driving with the windows down versus the window up will affect your fuel economy. And, of course, there's Betty.
You're going to go there again.
But, no, you're and actually, that was Bobby, but, yes, you're exactly right. Steve, are you still there? Okay. All righty, Steve. Thank you very much. Mark, you're next. How can we help you?
I didn't hear much. This is Mark. Are you talking to me, sir?
Yes, sir. We are.
I love your show. I listen to it every Saturday. I've got a ridiculously stupid question to ask. I don't exactly know where to start.
Wait a minute. my wife wants me to ask this question. Okay? That's the way we do it on this show, is we never raise our hands. And so let me get this straight. Your wife wants us to ask this question, and you go right ahead.
Okay. So I've got a 96 Bronco. I just bought it a year ago, and I've done a little work on it. It drives wonderfully. Okay. I bought it online, and when I picked it up, the check engine light was on. And the deal was done. I loved the truck. It was not that big a deal to me. Anyway, since I've taken it to a couple shops, and they can't find anything wrong. The last shop, which I like a lot, came to the conclusion that there was a short in a wiring harness somewhere. That's the ridiculousness part of the question.
Okay. Right,
where would you... Go ahead, sir.
Let me ask you a question. Has anybody got the light to go off for any significant amount of time for
no.
two or four or five days?
No. Nope.
Okay.
No. Nope.
Have you ever got it back with the light off?
No. It's
okay.
Always been on.
All right. I think what you need to do is just simply disconnect the negative side. Disconnect both battery cables. Okay. Take the cables themselves. The battery's over here. We're not talking about the battery. Take the cables themselves and touch the positive to the negative. That will discharge all the capacitors. Okay?
Okay.
Let it sit. You're going to put the positive on first, the negative on, then go drive it. And the question is the light out? Okay? And if the light's out and it comes on at some later date, then this hypothesis of a short doesn't fly.
Right.
If turn the key on and the light is immediately on, then that means that we do have a problem. But I want to tell you something. I've been around this business since 1968, and I was 2 years old back then. And you hear this, oh, there's got to be a short in the harness, and the harness goes from Benson, Arizona to Tucson, and it's going to be a really expensive thing, and we would probably have to replace every wire in the car.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
basically saying, I'm raising the white flag. I don't want to work on this anymore, and I'm going to hit you between the eyes with this giant estimate so that you'll go away. So let me ask you a question. Where do you live?
I'm in Gold Canyon.
That's a long way away from everything, isn't it? Do you guys still have Santa Claus visit out there?
That's why I moved there. I don't mind a drive.
Okay. Give me major cross streets where you're at right now.
Power and McKellum.
Okay. Oh, gosh. I would call Thompson's at the Stapley and Main, south side of the road, just east. And I'd talk to Brian or Thelma and ask them if... Now, I need you to answer the question when you disconnect the battery cables and touch the cables together. And then when you drive it, I think I need you to say, mark the lights out for 7.5 days. And then it comes back on. But if the light's on automatically, then it's not going to be a hard failure. Because the computer, when you wipe the computer's memory. The computer has to go in and see something happen 3, 4, 5, 6 times before it turns on the check engine light.
Right.
So I'm going to help you and knock a bunch of money off the diagnostic if you'll just check to see if the light comes on after you take the battery cables off. That's going to be an important thing. And if you walk into my shop and you said that would be a home run. At least you've done some work for us.
Wow. Well, at least you didn't laugh yourself silly at the problem. I was expecting nothing but laughter.
No, we were, but we just muted our mics. And you said a 96 Ford that you just bought it. And we were wondering whether you're going to admit that she bought it and that you ended up with it or whatever. But that's okay. We're not marriage counselors here. And you have a really great name, so your parents loved you. And
that's why I called. I figured you would have an answer.
Yeah, and you know, I'm only as good as the information you give me. And so I like when people just talk about the symptoms. But in your case, I can, and we're both shaking our heads. What I've given you is really an important step. You don't want the shop to disconnect the battery. You don't want the shop to drive the things for, you know, 70 miles. You do it. And then if you want, you can do this.
disconnect the battery cables, drive it until the light comes on, then stop by where the three-whiskered kid lives at the auto parts store and say to him in a really nice way, you know, I don't know anything about cars, nothing about cars, but I've told that you guys can tell me what this code is and then just kind of give me a piece of paper that says what it might be. It's a guess. The piece of paper is just a bunch of guesses. And so he'll give you the code, and he'll give you the guesses, and it's at that particular time you can take it into your shop and say, here's the code. That's all I can tell you. You guys call me with an estimate. That's what I would do.
Okay. Okay.
So,
if this works, you are definitely going to get a call next Saturday, and I'm going to have a dinner reservation made up for you already, you and your wife.
No, my, okay, that's fine. We like to eat at Jack in the Box or Taco Bell.
Cheap date.
And she's a cheap date.
Cheap date.
And she doesn't, she likes a little bit of wild turkey with her Mexican food. So that means I have to go get something and take it home. And then anyway, thank you for that offer. And thank you and from the bottom of my heart, because that doesn't happen very often, but thank you. But I would like to know if I was close to being right.
I will definitely let you know. I've never heard this solution from any of the mechanics I've talked to. Really appreciate it.
Do you agree with what I'm saying?
Oh, absolutely. I think that, definitely you need to start somewhere, and I think that's a great place to start.
Okay. Well, thanks for backing me up. I owe you $5.
Hey, okay.
602-508-0960. The lines are wide open, by the way. 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. Dave Martin from 16th Street, just south of Indian School. It's called Martin's Auto.
All about that theme.
Welcome back, everybody. 34 minutes after the hour, 11 o'clock. And Dave Martin from Martin's Auto sitting next to me. Dave Martin's dad and was a really good friend of mine. And so there is a generation difference between the two of us. But Dave's been around a long time. He's a second generation of that particular auto repair shop. And it seems like when, I don't know about you, but I started picking up cigarette butts in the early days. That was my job.
Yep.
Then they wanted me to morph to cleaning the bathrooms. And that was something I'm not doing. At least back then. I just didn't know how. So I knew that whatever I did, my mother wouldn't approve of. But that's the way all of us started. Is the second generation.
My dad was just like this. If you didn't clean it right, you just did it again and again and again and again until you did it right. Nope. And there was a right way, a wrong way, and his way.
Yeah. Absolutely. Blackwell Automotive is up at 40th Street in Greenway. I shudder to think why I'm doing his commercials. But on Mondays, about 3 o'clock, he's a nice guy. And Friday, at about noon, he's a nice guy. The rest of the time, he's a nice guy, too. Tom's been around a long time. He's a really good friend of mine, as is all the owners of the best car repair shops, according to Mark Salem. So he does everything from oil changes to engine swaps on domestic and import vehicles. But if you got an old hot rod and you got a problem with the hot rod, whether it's suspension or drivetrain or air conditioning or whatever, and you don't have somebody that really knows hot rods inside and out, then Blackwell Automotive is the place that you should go. Okay, we are talking off-air.
Yeah.
And we always do the radio show off air.
Yeah, I know.
Okay, go ahead.
Well, I just want to let you know, Mark, that last caller that's named Mark, and mm-hmm. you were pretty excited that you talked to another Mark, and you were bragging about how parents love him because he named him Mark. Well, I just wanted to let you know that, you know, Mark's, he's a classy guy. He drives a Ford.
Yeah.
And, you know, I mean, look, you don't.
Well, I overlooked that. I overlooked the idea that he was driving a Ford. I overlooked the idea that he bought it used. I overlooked the idea that he probably didn't say anything about the Carfax. But he was happy. And he was happy with it. And so that thing went through my hard drive. Even though most people says my hard drive is scrambled, it still picks up those things.
So whenever I do the radio show with Mark, I always come through the door and I always tell him, well, I just increased your property value by parking my Ford out in front of your place.
Yeah. And you don't know it now, but the guys are out there taking all the tires and wheels off of it and putting it on jack stands. So you're going to be a busy kind of stuff before you go.
Great.
It is that way. I'll tell you about another old timer. Is Bob over at Larry Harker's Auto. He's been around since 1967. I'm not going to do the math. Okay, 1967. He has a young man that works for him. Now, Bob is a master tech, ASE master tech, but this kid's passed every ASE test there is. That's called a world master.
Let me give you an example. You have a high school education, then you have an AA, and then you have a bachelor's, and then you have a master's. In the car repair business, even though we call ourselves ASE Master Certification Certified, he's master times 10. So for him to pass, including the test of how to paint a school bus, including the paint and body, the transmissions, the differentials, the air conditioning, performance, computers, all that stuff, this kid's done it. So what I use, Larry Harker's Auto at 38th Avenue Indian School, is anybody on that side of the town, I say you got the problem that nobody else can fix, then you probably should stop by. Ellen's at the front counter. She's married to Bob. Don't make her mad, because that's a bad idea, making the wife at the front counter mad. But anyway, it's a really good place. 38th Avenue and Indian School is a really good guy. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. We've had some good callers today, but if you have a guy that comes in and at the front counter wants to tell you everything that's been done, and he's had it to a lot of shops, what goes through your mind?
Well, I mean, the first thing is the information is the most important. Getting all that information to find out where their hands have been, what they've done to the vehicle, because all that is time. And time is money. We all know that. So we the more honest you are at the front counter, and the more information that you give us, the cheaper it is in the end. It just always works that way.
And there's three answers. Can you name them? There's three answers to every question that we're going to ask them. Yes, no, I don't know.
Oh, yeah, right. Oh, yeah, I get what you're saying now, yeah.
And the women will give you the I don't know, but the guys, the hairy-chested guys won't.
Yeah.
Yeah, they'll make something up, which sends you, it's like going, I need to go to Douglas, Arizona, and you're sending me east on I-10, and I end up in Dallas, Texas.
Right.
You know, or actually in Austin or something like that. So it's a tough issue, but there's three questions at the front counter. But I think you'll agree that what we really want to hear is the symptoms. What's it doing? We have a guy that's bringing it in, and he's got a whistle, okay? So we need it overnight. It's a whistle noise. Does it come from the front, the back, the left, or the right? Is it related to the engine? So does it whistle, and when you rev the motor up, it goes... I can't whistle very good. But that's kind of the issue is can you describe it better? Now, tomorrow morning, I want you just to bring the idle up, and I want you to make sure the air conditioning is off. Is there anything you can do the night before to eliminate that whistle in the morning? And if you want, get a piece of garden hose that's about 4 feet long. Start it up, lift up the hood, put one of the garden hose in your ear, and then start waving it around the engine compartment. And sooner or later, you're going to run across a vacuum leak.
Right.
Which is one of the many things that can happen.
The main thing is what you asked this guy in one of the calls earlier, is does it happen when it's cold? Does it happen when it's hot? Does it happen, you know, in the morning when you first start it? Those are
only
only in the morning. If it doesn't happen the rest of the day, I want to know that. And then how consistent it is. That's the killer, right? I mean, if it only happens, you know, one Thursday every month, well, those problems are a little crazy. And then we just had a car in there the other day that my guy that's been with me 35 years, he's like, you know, you're Eddie. And he went and checked out a car and it hit a short in the wiring. And before he went and moved, a lot of times technicians or guys go out there and they start moving harnesses around and doing all this other stuff. Well, then they fix it, but they only fix it temporarily. So when the problem was happening, he went out there and he tested both ends of the wiring harness and narrowed it down to where he found the short. Mm-hmm. So we were able to fix the problem. And of course, we have a Monday lunch meeting, and we go over these things. We train the younger guys that we have there to do it this way.
Right.
Because it makes the customer happy, number one, because if you fix it temporarily and they drive out of there, a week later they're coming back, or maybe a day later.
You're exactly right. Dave Martin from Martin's Auto Repair. He's on 16th Street just south of Indian School on the west side of the road, if I'm not mistaken.
Yep.
I agree with you, but there's no but. I agree with you. What I want is just yes and no answers. And if you don't know, I want to ask questions. For instance, the guy with the whistle, does it move with the RPM? Does it change when you put it into drive? Does it change when you turn your air conditioning on? Does it change when you turn your headlights on? Those are the questions. I need you to figure out what to make a change, because here's the deal. If we can't fix it, you have two choices. Wait till it gets worse or start guessing with your money. Those are the only two choices you got at my shop. Either wait till it gets worse, or we're going to start guessing with your money. Now, if you want to guess with your money, get on Google and start Googling everybody. And when you talk to the guy that just, you know, was born yesterday and he's telling you this is what it is, then if you want us and you okay the estimate, we'll do that. So that's the bad news.
Well, don't you know that Google is, everything on Google is actually perfect?
And true, and true as well. Anyway, we'll be back right after this. Welcome back, everybody. Mark Salem along with Dave Martin from Martin's Auto. And I've sent people to you, and just the other day somebody called back and said they were really happy with you, that you had really done a good job. Now, folks, and you said something to me already about this, but I usually say something like this. Go to Martin's Auto, and Dave's there, and he's a really good friend of mine, and tell him just symptoms, okay? Please, don't tell him how to fix the car. Don't tell him Mark Salem said this. Don't do none of that. But tell him before he gives you the estimate that it's important for you to know that I have naked pictures of Mark Salem. So that's what you did.
Yeah.
And I say, they'll laugh, but it won't make a doggone bit of difference on your bill. I can guarantee you that. And so he did call me, and he goes, and I told him that I had naked pictures of you, and he says all he did is laugh. And he says, they have no value here. But it's a nice way to let you know, I sent them to you. I don't want nothing. There's no bird dog fee. The idea is that please do the best you can.
And Mark, I just want you to know that, you know, therapy, it costs money.
And you know what? I have a free pass for therapy. I was just saw her the other day. She says, we're going to change your medicine.
And you these images of you naked pictures. You know, I need therapy for this.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And making the pictures was fun, though. You know? Action Auto Repair. Let's change stories here. I-17 in Deer Valley. Tom, I've known him since 1983. He's been in the business since 1983. I actually knew him before that. Whatever your repair needs, Tom and his staff are really good, excellent customer service, fast turnaround times, ASC certified technicians, and they'll help you understand what they're doing and why. So Action Auto Repair, I-17 in Deer Valley, northwest corner. Okay, we're going to go to the phones right now, and Jim's first. Jim, good morning.
Good morning, man. Before I start, I just want to say I do have one of those pictures.
Kind of gross, ain't it?
Well, it all depends on how you look at it. It's kind of like art, you know?
It's art. Wait a minute. Is it the full frontal or am I kneeling down?
Oh, this is the full frontal, man.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, that's good because...
Let's go to the Mark Salem School of Mechanics.
Okay.
Can you tell me what an alternator does?
The alternator is controlled by the regulator, and the regulator monitors the voltage in the battery, and the regulator is designed to know amperage and voltage, and the regulator tells the alternator, wind up, buddy, because I need to bring the battery up from 12.6 to 13.2. And so the alternator winds up, and he commands the alternator by telling it, come on. And it does it by a variety of electrical ways. So it's going to, and until then, the alternator is kind of just coasting. And it's doing really nothing until the regulator tells it. So the alternator simply does nothing more. Think of the battery as a big battery that's got water in it, and the alternator keeps the water full. That's it.
Okay, it has nothing to do with charging the battery.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it fills the battery up. It's a voltage issue. It does charge the battery,
okay.
But the parameters are between probably 13 and 14.6. It's going to charge like crazy below 12.
Next question is, why does the battery die?
Because it's old, and we have battery acid in it, and there's plates in there, and the plates deteriorate, and the plates are off the bottom of the battery about a half an inch. And so as these plates deteriorate, the deterioration builds up, and the plate is made of a conductive metal, a conductive carbon, and as the plate touches two plates, it shorts out that plate. And so typically the battery comes apart from the inside.
So it's the plates that make it go bad.
Well, most of the time. It could be a lot of different things. It could be
Okay, I just want to touch real quick on customer service.
Okay.
Like my battery died last Saturday, so I went to a local franchise place because their price was cheaper.
Okay.
And I sat there for 45 minutes. They weren't that busy. They had four mechanics on. And I just said, you know, I had enough. So I went across the street to another franchise dealer, and bing, bam, boom, they had it in 10 minutes. It's just, to me, customer service in some places is just non-existent anymore.
It's. I'm going to change your word from customer service to skill level. There's a lot of transmission shops that have decided that they have the ability to do everything I do and everything that Dave does, because we're kind of bumper to bumper. But there are certain limitations. I don't rebuild transmissions. You don't either.
No, not
but
at all.
But we know that they're bad, and we can tell you they're bad, and
right.
we can send you someplace. But it's really a matter of how long they've been in business. It's really a matter of how much they're paying their technicians. It has to do with whether they're insisting that they're ASC certified. But I'm going to assume that you're telling us the truth, and to have four guys around a car to do an electrical systems test would have just wadded my panties up something fierce.
Yep.
Because
yep.
there's
yep.
no that's reason for that. Dave, one guy, how long?
Oh,
15 minutes?
Yeah, 15 minutes, yeah. not less, yeah.
And what we're going to do is we're going to check the battery first, and we're going to put a load on the battery, and it has to maintain voltage above 9.6. So we're going to know the starter draws 200 amps. So the machine that we use already knows that. So we're going to apply 200 amp power, a draw from it for 15 or 20 seconds as if you're cranking it over, and it better hang on to that higher voltage. Then we're going to look at the voltage, and when we did that, it dropped down to 12.8. We're going to start the engine. The alternator better bring that 12 up to low 13s, maybe mid 13s. We're going to turn the headlights on. We're going to see the voltage drop and then come right back up because the alternator just made a difference. What you don't do is you don't disconnect a battery cable, and if a car continues to run, then it's not the alternator, because you've just wiped out the diodes on the alternator by disconnecting a battery cable. But really and truly, the equipment we use, we're in and out of that thing in 15 minutes or less. So it's not that big of a deal. All righty?
Okay. Thank you. All right.
Thank you. You bet. There was a question from somebody that called and didn't want to go on the air, and we had mentioned lift kits. I don't know what we were talking about. Do you remember?
One of the guys that you had sent to somebody to... Was it side by side? No, it wasn't that. Was it?
Yeah.
No, that was a side by side, wasn't it?
Yeah,
it was a side by side.
Yeah. Oh, and I said that we do a lot of off road.
Right.
Vehicles.
Right. Yeah. So okay. You asked them to talk to Alan.
Alan. Yeah.
Yeah.
And so yes, my shop has a performance division. It's called Salem Performance Division SPD, and my son runs it, and he does lift kits on quads, side by sides, four seaters. He does lift kits on virtually every kind of truck there is. And you can raise them 2 inches or you can raise them 15 inches, but it gets kind of expensive. But as you well know, that's happy money to a lot of guys.
Yeah.
And then they're not even capable of getting into the truck without something. So then they want electric running boards that come down when they get in, when they open the door, so they can take three steps up, one, two, and then get in the truck. And so there's lots of machoism, but then they can't put small tires on it, keep the tires. Now we got to go up to some big monster mudders, and then we're going to lift it up. So now what do we do with the underside? Do we undercoat it? We paint it? What do we do so it's pretty?
Put lights.
And put, oh yeah. Oh yeah. I want to tell you, and it's true. We just had it's a Can-Am Maverick, which is the biggest and best and the newest one they had. So a guy brings it in and, we give him the menu, and he just says everything. So one of the things that he wanted that we had never done before, we do lots of lighting. He wanted red lights underneath the body of the off-road vehicle. So he flipped the switch, and as he's driving down the road, it looks like it's on red light. It looks like it's floating in the air. And he came back and he said to us, you can't believe all the people that have run me down at the dunes and so forth and want to know what I did to have this thing look like it's riding on a red cloud. But yeah, it's stupid money.
It's fun money.
It's fun money.
Yeah.
You're right. And it's macho and it's testosterone money.
Oh yeah.
But I put my first lift kit in 1974.
Yeah.
And then I had my truck painted red, white, and blue. And so people loved it back then.
Yeah.
And it was a half ton Chevy. and had a 350 and had an automatic. So I think we put a 4-inch lift kit on it, but there's also lots of money involved, because if we have to stretch the drive shaft and we have to put new brake lines on it, and then we put different tires and wheels, and we have to match the circumference or two, or we're going to throw your speedometer off, and then we've also got your exhaust systems to deal with. So there's lots of moving parts in there.
So did you ever take your truck out to the desert or dunes or whatever and romp the hell out of it and then bring it back in and work on it all week so you can do it in next weekend?
No, let me tell you what happened. You started off, you said, take your truck out to the desert and romp it.
Yeah.
Okay, and then you said, bring it back and work on it the next day. You forgot a step. Tow it home.
Tow it home, yeah. Yeah, we've done that, too. We did that, too.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. It was. It's just the way it was back then.
Yeah.
We just did a Can-Am Maverick where the rear end of it has 23 inches of travel. Otherwise, in the middle, let's say half of 22, it's 11 inches. So it's got 11 inches up and 11 inches down. And then they have these big threaded collars that you can move that. But if you figure that we got 11 inches up and 11 inches down, we got 22 inches of travel. This thing rides like a cloud.
Yeah.
It's just, but you put a couple of big guys in the back seat, then you put 400 cans of beer and the guys are in the front seat. All of a sudden, it's sitting down kind of low and you're not riding on the cloud anymore. So those are all the things, but like you said, it's happy money.
Well, it's really funny that you said that because, you know, the thing of it is these people want these off-road vehicles, but they want it drive it like it's, you know, they want it to drive like it's a, you know, mm-hmm. a luxury car, right?
Yep.
So they do. They put all that stuff on there, and it's, you know, I had a, and I still have it, but I have a 350R Honda Odyssey,
uh-huh.
and it has a little bit of a suspension on it, but by the time you're done romping this thing, your body's pretty beat up, and the older you get, the mm-hmm. harder it is to recover from it. But,
yeah.
You know, now they've got these, the new, you know, all these new vehicles with the suspensions on them, and they drive so nice.
So I take this out, and we got a bunch of people up in Payson that are helping me do some cattle work, coursework. So I said, I'm going to take you guys for a ride in this new thing. And so I said, it's got Bluetooth, and I don't really know how to do it. And one of the kids goes over and pushes the button, and it comes on, and then it says, hi, Mark. And it's got four big speakers. So we get in, and it starts playing my music list. And I have a couple of really nice songs that are my age, you know what I mean? And so here we are driving through the forest, and I turn this stereo up. Ooh, it's loud. And everybody's rocking and rolling because they're 20 years younger than I am. But it's playing on my phone. So then my phone rings, and it dims, and then I'm talking on the speakers. Well, I can't very well use bad words because I'm talking on the speakers.
Yeah, absolutely. Everybody in the car hears it.
So I said, hey, what button do you push to mute this thing? But those are the kind of technological issues. We have a dashboard, a windshield, that drops down. You push a button, and it'll come up an inch at a time.
Seen that, yeah.
And they're frosted, so they're dark. Then it brings horizontal, and then you can open it wide, and it gives you the breeze.
Yeah.
Now, it doesn't do a damn thing for dust because the dust curls around the windshield and feels the car. But boy, is that's well over $1,000.
Yeah.
But everybody wants it because they don't want to get sunburned. Anyway, 602, no, you can get me at mark@marksalem.com. Mark with a K at marksalem, like the cigarette, .com. mark@marksalem.com. If you want to get a hold of Dave at Martin's Auto, you can send me an email and I'm happy to pass it on. Nevertheless, it's a good idea when you're doing on car repair, as you say to them, what is your diagnosis and how sure are you, and I want my old parts back. And those are three sentences that will save you, because if they don't fix it and you have the old parts, you can say, let's start by putting the old parts on. Mark@marksalem.com.